Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Spark Show DFS podcast. I'm your host, Sparky Lee. Now is the time for a tradition unlike any other. How'd that make you feel? That just rock you to sleep? Did that put you on the couch on Saturday afternoon, kind of a little drunk? Plate of nachos in front of you, some wings. That's probably where I'll be at. But before we get into any Masters talk, I want to go over a little bit of March Madness, a little bit of Valero Texas Open. Hopefully I'll keep it brief because this might be a long one, but I'll glaze through those real quick and then we'll get to the Masters talk. So that'll be right after that. But we're going to talk about March Madness real quick. I felt like it was kind of the same as the Final Four for the Dell Technologies match play. It just wasn't all that exciting for me. Auburn seemed like a real fun team to root for. Their best player got hurt. They seemed like a team of destiny, but Virginia yet again escaped, went on to win. They beat Purdue in the same kind of fashion, and then they ended up winning in the same kind of fashion. Michigan State was there. I'm not a big State fan, obviously. Big Michigan fan, so that kind of sucked for me. But they earned it, I guess. Texas Tech was a scary team. They showed it all throughout the year and throughout the tournament. Whooped our ass, but Texas Tech, Virginia for the championship game. Seemed like it was going to be super boring, but it was actually a pretty fun game to watch. A little bit of back and forth. And my model put it at 130 points, so the over would have been a clear-cut pick there. But I was just looking at it. I got the under at 118, and they were the first and third ranked scoring defenses. Michigan was second, and you saw what happened in the Michigan-Texas Tech game. Virginia played Wisconsin early in the year, and that would have hit the under. All those games that they play against those similar slow-style, good defensive teams just hang right around 100 points. So I was like, whatever, this game's going to be super slow. They're going to try and prove a point and see who's the better defense and just really try and force the issue, which you kind of saw early on. 5 minutes into the game, I was like, wow, this under was a for sure lock. But then the worst thing that could have happened to me was Virginia pulls away there right after about 5 minutes when the point total was like 7. Virginia just started knocking down shots, pulled away. And then that's when you saw Texas Tech up the pace. And then from there, it was just Virginia would knock down shots, pull away a little bit, and Texas Tech would keep the pace going. And then that just brought it to an over. And it would have hit even if it didn't go to overtime. But that kind of screwed me over. But that wasn't even... I had a good tournament besides that, because I got first place in a 90-player pool tournament. And that was because Virginia won. And I jumped from like 7 to first place. And then in another tournament of 25 people, I was in first place. But if Virginia won, it would have knocked me out. So either way, I'm sitting at winning, a couple hundred dollars at the least throughout my brackets. So I was kind of in a win-win situation, which was great to watch. I could root for either team, really, and still end up sitting pretty. But Virginia won. I went first to 90. Ended up cashing out pretty solid. So, a decent tournament all around. Wish Michigan would have made it further. Iggy Brazdeikis just declared for the draft, so we're pretty much screwed for the years coming. But we'll still be pretty experienced next year. I don't think you guys care about Michigan basketball talk, so let's move on to the Valero Texas Open. Corey Connors came out of nowhere, qualified through a playoff, and then got into the Valero Texas Open, won that, and now he's in the Masters field, which is awesome for him. But you kind of noticed this early on in the year. He was so elite with his irons. His proximity numbers were like top 10, his strokes gained approaching the green, top 10 on tour. But he was missing cuts left and right. So it just seemed, based off of his stats, like, how is this guy, the most important stat is strokes gained approaching the green. And he's missed like 4 out of his last 5 cuts going into that event. So that might be kind of a strategy to look for going forward, is just find these guys that seem like they shouldn't be doing as bad as they are, but they're doing terrible, and their odds drop. I don't know what he was going for to win before that, but I can't imagine he was better than like 100 to 1 odds, 150 to 1. So you find these guys that just like stats-wise look great, but just aren't playing well. So their number is going to be super big, And then you just place a little bit of scratch on them throughout the year, and then maybe it pays off. Because all you got to do is hit it once in a year, and you're gonna double your money almost. I took Siwoo Kim after the second round. That was dumb. He was plus 175 to win, and it just felt so wrong to take that number for an outright winner. But he shot 66 first 2 days, had a 4-stroke lead. And then the thing that I saw, and I think I mentioned it in a tweet or maybe in the podcast as well from last week, but the third round leader from each of the last 5 years at the Valero Texas Open went on to win it. So I thought, if I don't take Siwoo Kim now at plus 175 and then he shoots another good round and is in the lead for the third round, he's going to be like minus 300 to win or something stupid. So I was like, I'm going to get ahead of it right now, put some money on Siwoo Kim. He's going to be leading the third round, and then he's going to coast through and win it. Didn't pan out. I'm an idiot. Sometimes happens, but that's the way it goes. That's probably as much talk as we need to do for recap-wise, so we can get on to the Masters, hit the course up, and some strategies, and then start picking players for you. The course is Augusta National in Augusta, Georgia, par 72, traditional par 72, 7,435 yards, plays decently long, but in certain spots, we'll get to that in a minute, ryegrass fairways and roughs, the greens are Bermuda, and they're super quick, very hilly and undulating. The whole course is pretty hilly with elevation changes. There's trees lining pretty much a good chunk of the course. There's a little bit of water, but most of it's on the back nine. The rough is almost non-existent, so if you stay out of the trees, then you're going to be all right, but even then it won't really kill you too much. A lot of these holes dog leg left, so it favors lefties. You've seen Phil, you've seen Bubba, you've seen Mike Weir win here, or righties that can hit a draw. Kind of helps them, because about half the holes turn from right to left. Three of the par threes play shorter at 180 yards or less. And then where you really make up for that distance is nine of the par fours are 440 yards or longer. So these par fours play really tough. And then the par fives are the four easiest holes on the course. That's where you're going to need to do most of your scoring. If there is some wind in tough conditions, like it looks like there might be, so you might want to check that these next 2 days, see what the weather's going to be like. It can change the leaderboard. Zach Johnson won here at one over. So if the wind gets pretty high and these conditions get bad, you can see a shorter hitter, some scrappy guys, climb to the top of this leaderboard. So that's kind of something to look out for. The key stats that I'm looking at this week, birdie or better, was a huge one that correlated here. I always look at that, but I'm really looking at it this week. Par 5 scoring, because it's so important to score on these easy par 5s. And these long par 4s are almost, some of them going to play like par 5s. So that kind of feeds into that as well. One thing that people don't really look at as much is strokes gained putting. But when I looked at guys' stats this year and see how it correlates to how they've finished in previous years at the Masters, and I know from year to year, people kind of become different players and their stats change a little bit, but their stats right now as a whole kind of give you an idea of what type of player you're looking at for each guy. But strokes gained putting was huge here. And most people say that, you know, putting's so crazy here, it doesn't matter. But that kind of stuck out to me, and especially one putt percentage. So I feel like there's a confidence factor here where if you're knocking down a lot of one putts, nothing builds more confidence in golf than that. So guys that tend to knock down one putts at a higher percentage will build up confidence here on a tough course on the big stage. So that's one that I'm looking at this week more so than I would other weeks. Another one that kind of goes to that same point is scrambling stats, which I wouldn't really think here. You know, there's not much rough. You can spray it a little bit. Scrambling doesn't seem like it'd be a big deal here. But it goes to confidence again. Guys that are good at scrambling, everybody's confidence gets tested when you miss the green in regulation, when you have to go up and down to save par. And on a course like this, if your confidence is getting tested, the good scramblers are going to have a better time moving forward and scoring. So one putt percentage to build confidence, good scrambling to test your confidence and overcome. So I kind of like those two stats this week for the Masters specifically, because that just seems like the theme of this event. Another big one that I'm looking at is strokes gained off the tee and driving distance. Driving distance seems to matter here. If you can cut certain corners here and consistently get shorter shots into these gnarly greens, it's really going to help you out. Strokes gained tee to green in general, you know, you see all types of players win here. So any way you can get to the green, whether you're consistent off the tee, consistent into the green, consistent around the greens, is always going to help. And if the rest of your game kind of picks up that week, it'll be good. So I'm not trying to pinpoint any one specific type of player, just guys that seem to be confident and are just generally good tee to green and can score. And the last one I'm looking at is par four scoring, because you're typically going to want to look at par four scoring. I think the par threes, you know, being shorter this week are going to play a little bit different than they usually do, because a lot of times you'll see the par threes up at around 200 yards or longer for the most part, and you'll have one at like 170 yards. But there's shorter par threes here, so it's just going to take that out of play a little bit more. And that's pretty much it for the stats that I'm looking at this week. The field for the Masters this year set at 87 golfers. You know, the bottom like 21 golfers are 500-1 odds or much worse to win it. So you can realistically kind of carve those guys out of it and not even look at them for the most part. So it really brings the field down to like 65-70 realistic DFS plays. There's a lot of top level talent here. And then some of the bottom tier guys are the amateurs, and then just older guys that have won it in years past that are just trying to, just because they have the exemption, they're going to come and play. So a lot of those guys you can not even look at while you're making your lineups. The strategy for this week, like I said, ignore those bottom 15 or 20 guys. You know, maybe if you get real lucky, two of them are going to end up in the top 20, but most of them are going to end up missing the cut. So it's not really a gamble you want to take. And then with more DFS players playing this week, because it's the Masters, you know, a lot of people that don't normally play DraftKings, FanDuel, golf are going to play this week. And then you have a small field. The ownership's going to be even more important this week. So there's going to be a high concentration on a few different guys. And if you can pinpoint those pockets of where ownership's going to be, it's going to be great to pivot off of that. And that'll give you a huge advantage, especially if you're playing some of the bigger tournaments like the Millie Maker and stuff. That's pretty much it for the strategy. So now we can get into the picks. The big dogs this week, we're going to look at guys on DraftKings that are 9,100 and up. For my cash plays, first one off the board here is Rory. I feel like he's going to be very highly owned, as he should be. Five straight finishes at Augusta of 10th or better. Five straight finishes of 6th or better in his most recent events. He's got by far the best course history and form out of anybody right now. He's got the storyline of he's circling that career Grand Slam. So there's all these things built into it. He's still a great pick, but he's probably going to be really highly owned. I think a lot of people are going to just start their lineups this week, pick Rory, and then go from there. So cash plays, I love Rory. GPP, he might be too high owned for me this week. I advise if you go into GPP plays with him that you go all in and go in heavy, because he is going to be highly owned. My next cash play is going to be Tommy Fleetwood. I think with all this talent in the 8,000s and the 9,000s, it's kind of tough to tell where the ownership's going to land, especially when there's going to be an influx of new DFS players that don't normally play. So it's going to be hard to track, like, where would these people go with their picks? So it's going to be different than most weeks. So I think you just got to follow your gut when it comes to making these picks. Fleetwood's fourth in strokes gained off the tee, fifth in scrambling this year. He's coming off of two consecutive top five finishes. So my gut is telling me right now that he's not going to get in trouble much because his driver is so good. And if he does ever get in trouble here, he's going to have the confidence to get out of it. So that gives him a really high floor. He's going to be able to score here. He's going to have a lot of opportunities. But I see him, especially in this lower 9,000 range, a lot of people are going to pick him. So I kind of lean more cash with him. I wouldn't hate him in GPP stuff, but I would lean more towards cash. My last cash play is Jason Day. He's another guy with really high floors. Last 5 years, he hasn't finished worse than 28th at Augusta, but he did miss the cut at the Valspar in his last event, so that kind of scares me a little bit. But he is kind of well-rested since his back issues that he had a few weeks ago, and he's looked really good with the driver. He's fifth in strokes gained off the tee, and he's always been good on the greens, which is awesome here, because you're going to want to avoid three putt, and he's fourth in strokes gained putting. I could see him finishing around a 20th or top 20. But again, 9,100, this is going to be a high ownership range, so I would tend to lean more cash plays. Unless you hear something different with ownership, then you can go any way you want. But I still like him this week. Now getting to the GPP plays for the big dogs. First one up is Justin Rose, 10,800. He's right behind Rory in pricing and DJ, and he's in front of Tiger. So I feel like he's in this spot where there's going to be a lot of ownership in front of him and behind him, so he might get overlooked a little bit. His ball striking hasn't been great recently. He's coming off of a miscut and then a 63rd place finish in two of his last three events, so that's going to scare people away. But his course history is phenomenal. Five straight years of finishing 14th or better at the Masters. And the big thing that I was looking at with the confidence factor was one putt percentage and scrambling. And he is first in one putt percentage, first in three putt avoidance. So if he's just getting on these greens, I feel like he's going to have a great time. Seventh in scrambling. So this seems like a guy that's got the course history, you know, he's got the confidence. So even if he's not in the best form that he's been in the last 2 years or so, he's still going to have a good outing here in my eyes. So if people aren't going to play him, I like him as a very good GPP play and with great potential to end up winning this thing. My next play is John Rahm at 10,000. You can get Ricky. You can get Koepka, you can get Bryson, you can get Fleetwood, and you can get Jason Day for cheaper than John Rahm. So I feel like that alone is going to suck a lot of ownership away from him. But he's coming off of a fourth place here last year. Six of his last seven events have been 12th place or better. A lot of people that I've been listening to talking about the Masters, a lot of these DFS experts and stuff, have been ragging on his short game, his around the green stuff. But then when you look at the stats, everybody besides Fleetwood that I just named that's underneath him, they're all right in the same ballpark with him as at strokes gained around the green. So he's really not that bad around the green. But the people don't like John Rahm. People think his around the green game sucks. You know, he's 10,000 on DraftKings. So that might push his ownership pretty low. So I kind of like him in this spot for GPP plays, especially because he's one of the best golfers off of the tee, and his three-putt avoidance is also one of the best this year. So what I'm really leaning towards this week is guys that are long and good off the tee, and then guys that are confident on the green, whether it's one-putt percentage or three-putt avoidance or just strokes gained putting. I think that's kind of the bread and butter for this course, especially if the conditions are good. My next guy and the last guy of the big dogs that I like for GPP plays is Brooks Koepka. He's one of the longest hitters on tour. He's 15th in driving distance. He's 12th in par 5 scoring, which is huge here. The worst stats that he has this year is strokes gained putting and scrambling. He does have a little bit of shaky recent form, but decent course history, and he's gotten better in each of the last 3 years. 33rd, 21st, and 11th in his last three appearances here. I think he missed last year because he was hurt, but that was the 3 years before that. Obviously, he's big, or he's good in big events. We've seen that. So I like him here. He could... I didn't hear much buzz on him early about people liking him, but I have of late, and there's been a lot of bets placed on him to outright win from what I hear. So I don't know if it's going to translate to DFS stuff in DraftKings, but if it does, I might pivot to Bryson here, DeChambeau. I think he's Brooks is 9,500, and Bryson might be 9,300, and they're both kind of in the same boat of good long ball strikers on the green. They've been real shaky, haven't been scoring the best as of late, so they're kind of getting overlooked, but I see one of them as being lower owned, so I'll kind of listen to that and then go with either one depending on ownership levels. But that's it for my big dog category. The value category this week is from 7,500 to 9,000 on DraftKings. Usually I go to like 7,200, 7,300, but since it's such a smaller field, I'm kind of shortening that category up a little bit. My first cash play is, I think, going to be very highly owned. Paul Casey, 9,000. In his last five starts, he's got a first place finish, a second place finish, and a third place finish. Last 4 years at the Master, a 6th, a 4th, a 6th, and a 15th. So just recent form and his course history tells you that he should be priced at like 10,000. But since he's Paul Casey, he's going to be a little bit lower than that. But a familiar name with that good of recent form and course history, he's going to be very highly picked. He's great ball striker, great par 5 scorer. He's going to go highly owned, so cash plays, absolutely play him. GPPs, I probably will just outright fade him in GPP plays because he's going to be so highly owned. But he might not be, so that's something to watch for. Next guy in this group, Hideki Matsuyama, 8,700. And he's another guy that I see being highly owned. They're pretty similar when you look at their stats. Casey's a little more accurate off the tee, and then Hideki's better into the greens and scrambling a little bit. And then his course history, his recent form is pretty similar. Not quite as good, but Hideki's got 4 top 20 finishes in his last 4 starts. At Augusta, he's got 5 top 20s in Hideki's got 4 top 20s in his last 4 starts at Augusta, and then his last 5 tournaments, last 6 tournaments, he's got 5 top 20s. Wow, I butchered that. You might have to rewind and listen to that again, but good form, good course history. He's going to get some ownership, so cash plays, I like him here. GPPs, if you're going to go with Hideki, you're going to go Paul Casey in those big tournaments, I would suggest you go almost all in on them, because if the field's at like 20% on one of them and you're picking them 1 in 5 lineups and they end up winning the tournament, then you still might not even make money. So he's a cash play, maybe GPP. Another guy that's going to be very highly owned is Matt Kuchar. 7,900. He's got 2 wins on the year. He's played great at the Masters. He's made his last 5 cuts. 2 of those were top 5 finishes. He's 6th or better in strokes gained approaching the green, driving accuracy, green in regulation, par 5 scoring. So 7,900. It just, in the buzz that I've heard around him throughout this week, is that Matt Kuchar is going to be picked a lot. So cash play, great. GPP, I don't know if I'd do it, but if you want to, I'm not going to stop you. The honorable mentions that I had for this were guys that I really wanted to write about, And I did sneak him into the article for cash plays in this value category, but Sergio Garcia, 7,700. Ian Poulter, 7,600. I love both these guys right here. And if I'm playing a smaller tournament, or not really a tournament, but smaller, like head-to-head 50-50s, or just like, it's, you know, some of your buddies are playing and there's only like six of you, absolutely plug these guys in. But I see them, Sergio, Poulter, Kuchar, being super highly owned. So I'm probably not going to touch him in the big tournaments. But if you're playing something smaller, like, these guys are great value picks. My first risky pick for the value category, GPP play here, is Xander Schauffele, 8,500. He's coming off of a missed cut, so that might have people going the other way. And then his last time, his only time here, last year at the Masters, was a 50th place finish. That is probably going to push more people away as well. But stats-wise, he rates out about as well as anybody in my model. So I really like Xander here, especially if he's going to be low ownership. He's good around the greens. He's got a well-rounded game. Top 10 in both par 5 and par 4 scoring. So I like him here. The other guy that I thought about in this spot, and you could probably interchange him with any one of these three risky GPP plays that I'm about to mention, is Francesco Molinari. But I just have this weird feeling that him winning a major last year and him having good form, being real consistent lately, he's going to get a lot of picks. So I kind of took him out. I see him as a high floor cash play. But if he does go low owned, then you could swap him out for any one of these guys I'm going to mention. But that was Xander at 8,500. Next guy is Adam Scott, who I feel like going into this week, I didn't hear anything about him. And then all of a sudden I looked up one article that was talking about ownership, and it said he was going to be the most highly owned, or one of the most highly owned golfers. So now I don't know what to think, but I'm still going to leave him here in this category and trust my gut. But Adam Scott, 8,400. A similar game to what Xander has. He's not quite as good tee to green, but his putting is vastly improved. He does carry, you know, multiple putters, and you never know which one's going to come out of his bag. So that kind of scares you a little bit, but maybe that keeps his ownership low. He's also a really good par 5 scorer, so that is huge here. And he's in a group, pricing-wise, with Schauffele. You know, Phil won here. Finau is always a fan favorite. So Adam Scott could have a little bit lower ownership. And I feel like this lower 8,000 might be kind of lighter on ownership. That's just my gut feeling. So I feel like Adam Scott can't be that highly owned. And he did win here in 2013. So that's always, you know, that builds up your confidence a little bit. My last GPP play in this category is Patrick Cantlay at 7,700. He's priced the same as Sergio. He's above Henrik Stenson. He's above Poulter. He's above Woodland. He's above Webb Simpson. He's right below Matt Kuchar. So he could potentially be overlooked, but he's 7th in driving distance, 10th in strokes gained tee to green. You know, low ownership paired with that, especially because he's coming off of a missed cut. And he was 58th here last year, so I just see him as being an unattractive pick in this category. But stats-wise, and if you look at his long form, like, he could be due for a bounce back here. So I really like him for a GPP play this week. That is it for the value category. Now moving on to the sleepers, 7,400 and under on DraftKings. My first cash play, which I had as these sleepers, I was all over the place on it. I was mixing and matching and moving them all around. I can't get my mind made up, but Matt Fitzpatrick is my first cash play at 7,300. I thought he would be like a risky pick that nobody's going after, but now that I really kind of dive into it, I don't think so. I think he's gonna get a little bit of ownership, and especially the way these lineups are gonna be made this week, at least in my dumb brain, that he's going to be a little bit higher owned. But in his last five events, he's had 19 rounds out of those five events, and he shot worse than one over in one of those 19 rounds. So his floor seems crazy high right now. He last 2 years here at the Masters, they were both, I think it was a 38th finish last year, 32nd the year before. They're both top 40s. And then the year before that, he was 7th in 2016. And then the Arnold Palmer Invitational a few weeks back, he was 2nd place. You know, that's going to give a lot of people confidence in him right here. So when I really dove into this one, I was like, Matt Fitzpatrick is probably a cash play here, more so than a GPP. Next guy is a guy that I did have in GPP, moved him up to cash again. And I'll tell you why here in a second. Brant Snedeker, 7,200 on DraftKings. After listening to a bunch of preview stuff about the Masters, it seemed like a lot of guys liked him. I don't have the most confidence in the world in him, but I do like him. But if his ownership is going to be high, you know, that kind of pushes me more towards cash lineups. You could put him in GPP and it'd play off. But 4 straight cuts here he's made at the Masters. One of those was a 10th place finish. He's coming off of a decent stretch, and he was 5th at the Players a few weeks back. He's got great short game, which is really going to help out his floor here. Like I said, I'm not crazy about him, but he is a good pick down here. Depending on where ownership goes, would sway me from GPP to cash, but I have him in cash right now. Charles Howell III is my last cash play at 7,000. He's been a top 25 machine. He hasn't played here before. If he has, it's been years ago when he was a lot younger, so I didn't see that anywhere. But I see at 7,000, the way his form is, he's going to be super highly owned this week. His tee to green game is awesome. He's 2nd on tour in green and regulation, 3rd bogey avoidance. He's 1st in par 4 scoring. So cash plays, I absolutely love him here. I think even though we don't have that course history here, makes you feel a little uneasy, I think he's still has a really high floor and would be a good cash play. But if he goes crazy highly owned like I think he is, then I wouldn't touch him in GPP at all. But again, it's your world. I'm just living in it. Do whatever you want. Risky GPP plays. Billy Horschel is my first. I had him up in cash, and I flipped him back. I flipped him and the next guy back for Matthew Fitzpatrick and Brant Snedeker. But Billy Horschel, 7,100. He was super highly owned last week. Finished 136 at the Valero Texas Open. So I think a lot of people feel burned by him and go, he's terrible right now. He's not going to be a pick that I'm making this year. So I think that's going to keep his ownership down. But let's not forget, not too long ago, FedEx Cup playoffs. There's 4 events there, obviously. He finished 3rd twice, and he finished 2nd once. And those are some of the best players in the world are playing in this tournament or in this playoff stretch. So he's a killer. He's a big game hunter. If people are going to bow out on him this week, he could be a very good GPP play. My next guy, and he was another guy that I swapped out. You're going to hear that a lot through this category because I just don't have a good feel for these sleepers. But Eddie Pepperell, I think he's a fan favorite. Everybody loves him. He's hilarious on Twitter. Coming off of a 3rd place at the Players, which is the unofficial 5th major pretty much, last year at the Open, he had a great run. So I think people look at him as maybe the same type of big game hunter. He is young, though, but he's not shy in that big moment, in the big tournament, and he's a fan favorite. So his ownership could go up, but I've never really had all that much confidence in him, so I see him as a GPP play. So it's kind of one that I don't really have a great feel for, but I still like him here. And I actually put a bet on him to win it all, which was probably pretty stupid, but I just like rooting for the guy. My last risky pick in this category, Keegan Bradley, 7,000. I feel like I talk about him every freaking week, but great tee to green, obviously. Good ball striker, super accurate into the greens. But when he gets on the greens, he is literally blind. And my whole shtick this week was you got to find good putters. guys that feel confident on these greens, because that's going to do so much for you. But I feel like a lot of people are going to have kind of that same mindset and fade Keegan Bradley this week, because usually he's a cash play for me because of his floor. But this week I'm going to put him in GPP just because of that putting in these greens. People are going to look at him like a guy that can't really score, so that's going to keep his ownership down, hopefully. He hasn't played here in over 2 years, but he does have some experience before that, a 22nd place finish in, I want to say, 2015. You know, he's going to be good tee to green, so I'm just kind of hoping his putter gets hot and he can get his way into the top 20. That's really about as much as you can expect from him, but his floor is there where he's probably going to make the cut in most tournaments, and especially in a big tournament like this, and at least give himself opportunities to score. So that is everybody for my sleeper category. My last category is my dark horses. This is usually pretty slim pickings, but I have 6 guys down here now just because it's the Masters and I want to go all out for it. And I really like some of these deeper guys that I think you can almost fade some of these sleepers, because I feel like a lot of these guys in the 7,000s are going to be pretty highly owned. 7,000s and 9,000s, I think, are going to be the groups that everybody attacks. So once you dip down into these 6,000s, these dark horses, that kind of might help you out a little bit in terms of leveraging ownership against the field. But my first cash play in dark horses, Charlie Hoffman. He was 2nd place last week at the Valero. Awesome course history, obviously. People know that. He's always flirting with a first-round leader here. And that's why, going into it, I was like, I like him more as a first-round leader bet than a DraftKings pick. But then I looked at his first-round leaders number, and he was like 33-1. And I am not going to touch that because I don't think he's that good. It's just, I think it's more of a coincidence more than anything that he's this good here. But he's going to be a popular pick. Coming off 2nd place finish, and he plays well at the Masters. He's like exactly like Jordan Spieth this week, but a way lower dollar amount. So if somebody wants to roll the dice on him, I can't blame you here. He seems like a good pick, but I think the ownership will be a little bit higher, so I would be careful with that one. And these next two guys I think are going to have high ownership for being in the high 6,000s too. But I guess we'll kind of see how that plays out. It all depends on how people construct their lineups this week. But Kevin Kisner, 6,700. He's been very accurate off the tee. Super good on the greens. Everybody pretty much knows that. But the thing is, he seems like he has a high floor in this spot, especially for his dollar sign, because he's finished 43rd or better in each of his last 3 attempts here in the last 3 years. And then he has awesome recent form with 6 straight finishes of 30th or better. So I really like Kevin Kisner in this spot. But I feel like these Charlie Hoffman, Kevin Kisner, Siwoo Kim are going to be the last picks that a lot of people are putting into their lineup. So I'd be careful with that. But on cash plays, I think they're still great, because these are guys that could finish top 10 for you, and they're, you know, upper 6,000. So that's kind of a smart play. Siwoo Kim is my last guy here. 6,700. Like I mentioned earlier, he had a big 4-stroke lead after 2 rounds of the Valero Texas Open, but then he ended up finishing 4th. His stats look awesome. He's top 15 in scrambling, 1 putt percentage, birdie or better, par 5 scoring, and par 4 scoring. He was 24th here last year, so I really like him. I think Kevin Kisner was 28th last year too, so these are 2 guys that I really like in this spot for how cheap they are, and especially in cash lineups. Last 3 guys of this dark horse category are, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce this one, but Kiradesh Afabarnrat, 6,700. He's like 5'6", 400 pounds. Love this guy. He's got a vape pen in his back pocket. My confidence stats, the ones I mentioned earlier, that I'm really trying to go contrarian against all the other experts, because I think I found a little gem here, is one putt percentage, scrambling percentage. There are three guys that are top 25 this year in both of those. I don't know if I've named them yet, but I've definitely talked about all three of these guys already. Justin Rose, Siwoo Kim, who I just mentioned, and then Kiradesh. So those are kind of my three guys that I really want to watch this week to see if the narrative plays out. Because if these three do well, then I might keep this in mind for next year. But he's only played here twice at the Masters. Kiradesh has 44th last year, 15th in 2016, 2 years prior to that. So he seems to be comfortable on this course. And if you look at his course or his recent form, he's either missing the cut by quite a bit or he's in the top five. So a lot of boom or bust potential here. I think that might sway some people away if they see those real bad finishes he's had lately. Seems like a really risky pick, but he's one of my confidence X factor guys that I'm going to be looking at this week. Kiradesh at 6,700. Another guy that is usually more of a cash play for me, and I think he's kind of borderline here too, but Emiliano Grillo, 6,600. He could end up being a little bit higher owned because I have heard some people talking about him as a pretty decent sleeper pick that they're going to sprinkle into GPP plays, but I still kind of like him. He's played here twice. He had a top 20 finish in 2016, and then he made the cut in 2017 with a 51st place finish. So he's played decent here, which gives you quite a bit of confidence in the kid moving forward. He's kind of been disappointing this year. Like early on, he had a second place finish, but in the fall, I want to say. But since then, he's kind of been up and down. He's barely cracked the top 25, but he did have a 26th place finish at the Players, which is nice to see. So I think for 6,600 and a guy that could flirt with a top 20 finish, he would be a decent pick, especially GPP plays, and especially if he goes low-owned. And then my very last guy on the board here, I think this and Kiradesh might be my two big sleepers that really pay off that not many people are going to be looking at, hopefully. But Aaron Wise, 6,600. He hasn't been scoring great as of lately. But usually that's because he's had one bad round per tournament where he shoots like, you know, two or three over, something like that, and it just takes him out of it. But he finishes decent outside of that. Like at the World Golf Championship in Mexico, he finished 19th, and he started that with two over in the first round. So if he can cut that one bad round out and just ring together a couple two, three unders, and then another couple two, three unders, finish this thing at 10 under, he's really going to surprise people, and I think he can do that, which would make him a very good play at this price tag, especially if nobody's talking about him. So I like him as a dark horse GPP play. Those are pretty much all my picks this week. Yeah. Now it is time for some bets. Hopefully tomorrow I'm going to have an article out. I missed it last week because I was super busy, but I'm going to have picks out, who I like to win, who I like to top 10, top 20, who I think is going to make the cut. I think I'm going to make a huge parlay here of guys that I think are just going to make the cut and just string together probably like 10 or 15 like decent picks, and then see how much that'll get me, and then place a little parlay on that. But first, for the guys that I like to win. So with the article, though, you'll be able to kind of just skim through and see all my projections that my model has and then my favorite picks. But I'm just going to kind of gloss over right now some betting strategies and some picks that just jump out at me right away. First is Justin Rose to win it all at 12-1. Like I said, in my model, he is, his probability to win is, let's see, just over 7.5% at 12-1. Those are his odds. But then in my model, he's closer to 10%. So that's odds to win. If you're 3% higher, you know, obviously it's still only, he's still only going to hit, you know, 10% of the time, which isn't great. But 3% difference is, over the course of a year, is going to make a lot. So that's the first pick that really jumps out to me. And then, like I said, with my confidence factors earlier, his putting, one putt percentage and three putt avoidance have both been the best on tour this year. And then his scrambling is seventh best. So he seems like a guy to me that if he's striping them all right and he's just getting on the green, or if he does get in trouble a little bit, this is a guy that's going to give him a chance, give himself a chance to bounce back into it, and a guy that's going to get microwave hot once he gets on these greens and just starts rolling in putts. So he's kind of my favorite pick to win this week. You know, I even sprinkled on, like I said, Eddie Pepperell. He's 125-1. You know, he's not going to have great odds to win it, but just I think he's got better odds than what they're projecting him for. You know, it's still going to hit 1 out of 100 times, but 125-1, I just kind of like that value play. Xander was another one up there that I saw it. Like, Eddie Pepperell was 1% better. Xander's 1% better chance to hit it, and he's 40-1. I do like Dustin Johnson as well at 10-1. Outside of that, I even like Rory at 7-1. So if you really feel good about Rory, I think people look at that number in a field like this and it scares you away. But I think Rory, the way he's playing right now, is he's still slightly better than his odds to win, which sounds ridiculous. But if you feel good about Rory, I would roll the dice there. A couple other guys is like Finau. You know, can he win the big event? Not really sure, but just the way that this guy plays, you know, eventually he's going to win some majors. Gary Woodland, Adam Scott, or a couple other guys that I like to win. And once I get into the top odds for the top 10 and top 20, it really gets smaller there. And I just don't like placing those bets for whatever reason. The payout's not great. And unless you're going to take one of these top dogs and really put a lot of money on them, you're not going to win much. So it's like, that's kind of the strategy here, is to just look at, I don't know, maybe a Rory or a Dustin Johnson, maybe somebody a little bit smaller than that, like a Rahm or a Ricky that you think is going to get a top 10, and then just put a decent chunk of change on that and treat it like a head-to-head. But for my value plays out of this, in the top 10, Charles Howell III is 8-1 to top 10, and I see him as probably the best odds. And then Gary Woodland, Keith Mitchell, three guys. Gary Woodland's 5.5-1, or I guess 11-2, if you want to get technical with it. I usually don't use those kind of odds. I usually go plus 550, but just for audio, I feel like it's better to say 8-1 or 5.5, 11-2, whatever it is. But Keith Mitchell's 12-1. I like him in that spot as well, just the way that he can get off the tee. And he typically hasn't been a great putter, but as of lately, he's rolling them really well. So maybe that confidence moves forward, and then he fits that kind of mold of the player that I'm looking for, where he's a bomber, gets off the tee well, and then it just feels confident on the greens. So we'll see that going forward. But then my top 20 odds here, the only guy that's positive is Charles Howell III at plus 310. He's been a top 25 machine, like I said earlier. So even though he doesn't have the course history, I feel like he's just been flirting around with the top 20 for so many of his past events that his floor is way too good here to pass that up. So I went with Charles Howell III at plus 310. But again, if you wanted to go somebody else that's a little bit higher and just put a lot of money on them, because you're confident that they're going to top 10, like a Rory, but I can't imagine, his numbers are too good. It won't let me scroll over right now, so I can't check anybody, which sucks, but that's kind of my top 20 pick. Let's go first round leader. I think you can go Dustin, Rory, or Justin Rose, Justin Thomas. They're all 12-1 or 22-1 in that range, and they're all better odds to make that first round leader. But obviously, if you're tied for first round lead, then you're sharing some of that. Like, you're not getting paid out 20-1 if that's what the number is. You're getting paid out less than that, depending on how many people are tied. So that's kind of why it's baked into those numbers, and it makes it look so good, because Rory's 12-1 to first round lead, but he is 7-1 to win it all. But I still like those plays, because I feel like any one of those guys could just throw down a 7-under and outright lead the first round. So if you're feeling confident in any one of those guys, I say go for it. But I went with some deeper picks. I went with, like, Xander at 40-1. I like the bigger payout. Gary Woodland, 55-1. Kuchar, 40-1. Poulter, 66-1. And then I think there's – it's weird, because you look back at guys that have had the first-round lead here, or were within one stroke of the first-round lead. The furthest guys down that you can see are, like, a Shane Lowry. But then outside of that, there's not much guys in the last few years here that have been within a stroke of the lead or have the first-round lead that aren't really big names. Like, Kuchar is one of them. Obviously, Spieth has run the board with first-round leaders here. Charlie Hoffman's another guy. But, I mean, he just plays better here, apparently. So he's one of those picks. So I don't really love the deeper picks here, but I did end up doing it anyways. I like some of the guys in the 80-1 range, like Billy Horschel, Keegan Bradley, just these guys that have the potential to not only win a big event, but to just first round lead. So those are a couple other guys that I went after as well. I didn't place any... Oh, geez, my computer's freezing up on me, starting to freak out. This might be time to shut her down. But I didn't place any head-to-heads yet. I did like a few when I was rolling through them, and I haven't seen, I don't know if they've posted any three-ball matchups yet or anything. But some of the head-to-heads that I liked, if I can get there sometime today... Where was it? Oh, right here. Some of these head-to-heads that I like. First one was... Let's see. The first one that projected really well was Corey Connors versus Jimmy Walker. But Jimmy Walker has a better percentage to make the cut here in my model, but Corey Connors has the better percentage to win, and I think that's all because he's coming off the first place. Jimmy Walker has better course history here, so I don't trust that one specifically, because I think Corey Connors might just be a flash in the pan, so I don't want to touch him. Justin Rose over Tiger, I see that one as being too close to call, but I do love Rose here, so who knows, I might be egged into that one. This one is really intriguing, but it's kind of more just going out on a whim. Stuart Sink is minus 130 against Bernhard Langer, who's even. And I kind of want to go with Bernhard Langer. My model's better on Bernhard Langer, but that's because he's only played like, geez, what did he play? He played the U.S. Open or something crazy, and he finished like 26 or something. So that's like the only stats that I really have on him. But Stuart Sink has been so bad lately that Bernhard Langer, I think, especially he's played here the last 5 years, and he's actually got decent course history for being like 800 years old. So I might put money on him at even. Next one is John Rahm and Tiger. It's got John Rahm winning, and they're both the same odds, minus 115. Yeah, I might think about that one. This next one really gets me going, though, is Ian Poulter and Tony Finau going head-to-head. I have them pretty much similar to make the cut, but Poulter's plus 180 against Finau. I like Finau, but I feel like Poulter at plus 180 in the volatility of golf in just one event, I'm going to take Poulter every single time, given their course history, recent form right now. So I really like Poulter there. It kind of dips off here a little bit and gets a little wild. Phil Mickelson's plus 160 against Tiger. That could be something to think about, because Phil's either just going to tap out of this thing quick or give it a run for its money. So depending on how you think about Phil, he was swinging on the range earlier with a $100 bill out of his pocket. So, you know, that's probably a good sign, or it's a bad sign, I guess, how you interpret it. Other than that, yeah, I don't really want to go through the rest of these picks. Some of them look decent, though. Ricky Fowler over Spieth, minus 135. I might take out a loan and bet it on Ricky Fowler. Everybody's going to be on Spieth this week. He had a good showing at Valero Texas Open last week, and he's the Masters guy. But him in this event, Charlie Hoffman in this event, are going to have way too big of a bump on him. Tiger always carries a little bit of a bump on him. I don't like betting him, so I think I'm going to take Ricky Fowler here and just bet every dollar that I have in my pocket. Betting strategy-wise for live winners is always something that I really like to look into. I kind of looked at it earlier, and it's, you typically see, which I said I don't like the deep guys for a first-round leader, because it seems like there's always just talent that's within, you know, a stroke or two of the lead. Jordan Spieth, first-round leader last year. Tony Finau was right behind him. Matt Kuchar was right behind him by a stroke. Or two strokes, actually. Jordan Spieth had a two-stroke lead going after the first round. Patrick Reed, Rory Stenson, Charlie Hoffman, Adam Hadwin, Hao Tong Li, Rafa Cabrera-Bale were within three strokes of the lead. So it seems like there's always kind of talent after the first-round lead. So me betting 80-1 guys in that spot is probably pretty dumb. I think the smart thing to do might be to take a guy 40-1 or between that and 20-1 and really just invest on him, or, you know, one or two guys in that range might be the smart thing to do. And then it just seems like we have a lot of guys, like Patrick Reed was leading the second round, third round, won it last year. Sergio was few strokes back of the lead. Charlie Hoffman had it in 2017 and gave it up, but Sergio climbed back after that. He was six strokes back after the first round, and then he had the lead in the second round, third round, and then won it. 2016, Spieth was first round leader, second round leader, third round leader. Danny Willett won. I think we all remember that one. But Spieth, 2015, first round leader, second round leader, third round leader, won it. 2014, first round leader was Bill Haas. Oh shit, Bill Haas. And then Bubba was a stroke back after the first round. He was the second round leader, third round leader, and he won it. So basically, just kind of looking at that, it tells me there's a lot of guys that just run away with this thing. There's so much talent that the talent and the cream of the crop really rises to the top early. And then guys typically, can, like Spieth should have held on to the lead and won it when he blew it, and Danny Willett won it. But for betting live winners, I wouldn't get real cute with it. Betting long shots might be dumb, but I mean, you still want to do it a little bit just for the excitement, you know, because Danny Willett won. So you still want to do it a little bit, but I would probably keep it a little conservative. And then I wouldn't bet too many guys after, you know, midway through the second round that are too many strokes back. Because if the first round leader or the second round leader, third round leader just continues to go on and win this thing, there's not many people that come from behind here as of recently. So it could change, and you can do what you want, but that's just something that I'm going to be looking into while I'm betting live winners and stuff. And I think that is it for me. I came out with an article just before this podcast, so if you want to find that, sparkshowdfs.wordpress.com is my website, @sparkshowdfs is my Twitter handle. You can find it on either one of those, and it just goes over the picks that I've made, and it's just something visual. If you want to go through it again, you kind of missed something, you want to read about the course stats or the strategy, anything that I mentioned in this article, you can, or in this podcast, you can look up in the article. Tomorrow I'm going to come out with another article that has my projections on it, like who's going to outright win, who's going to top 10, top 20, make the cut based off of the model that I have, and then some of my favorite picks when I run the model against the odds that people are going for certain picks. So that will come out tomorrow. Thanks again for listening. Good luck this weekend, everybody. This should be exciting. You know, this is like Christmas for all of us golf fans. So enjoy it while you can. Eat some good food, drink some beer, win some money. Let's get it. Keep them in the fairway.